You know, pretty soon they come out of this one house, and then just where the bear was, all three of them were sneaking out, you know. But they were all turning the wrong way. You know, where they seen the bear last time, that's where they were sneaking out. But the bear has moved up further, you know. They were all sneaking the wrong way. You know, we watched them pretty soon. Missouri Stat came out first, and he was pointing his gun this other way, and you know, the two bears were up this way. And well, these other two old men were right behind him, you know. Then he stopped and looked around. Pretty soon he seen them, and then he told his other two old men, you know, where they were, I guess. Well, he was watching them from the top of the hill, you know, kind of look almost straight down at them. And we could see every move they make. We were making joking one another about it, you know. So we pretty soon up and shot. Pretty soon the first one dropped. And then another shot again, bang, bang, then the other one dropped again. So we went down to them. We took our pack and we took their pack and their knives, and then went down and then went to them, and then they skinned it. We skinned the two bears. And we didn't hang it up, you know, we was going to bring it back to the camp. So me and Simon and Missouri, well, was the three youngest ones, you know. So we said, we'll carry whatever we can, and then we bring it up to the camp, and then we could divide it there. So these three old guys said, well, we'll pack whatever we can too, they said, you know. But it's the hill was pretty high. But many years ago, the people has been out there hunting caribou and bear, you know. And you could see their footprints where they were, just like steps all the way up on it. And they know where it was, these old guys, and they told us where to go back up on top of that hill. So we started packing, me and Missouri and Simon, and then went quite a ways up, and we took a rest, you know, like pretty big pack with those two bears, you know. Then took another rest, and then we got up on the hill. But these old guys, they were still way down below, halfway yet. So I told them, well, let's go down and help them so they can come up empty-handed. So I went down, and then I packed up my uncle's pack. And this other old guy put his pack under my arm and then started walking up the hill again. Well, they were happy. They got up on top of the hill. After they got up on top of the hill, they were happy, you know. Well, we said that maybe probably that's our last hunting. And probably that's our last animal we're going to kill, they said, you know. So we had dinner and then we went to bed. Oh, the next day it was just raining. Fog. You couldn't see nothing. I was still under that tarp all day. And another day we stayed under there. 2 days and a half we stayed under that tarp, you know. We couldn't go any place. Raining, fog, you couldn't see nothing. We don't know where to go, right? But it was too wet to travel. So we just stayed there. And we had a lot of bear meat. We had nothing to eat. All we had was just salt and bear meat, you know. And that was enough for us. That bear meat and the salt was the most important thing. We had no more tobacco, no more tea, no more sugar, no more bread. And that's all we was just eating, was just bear meat. But we cook it different way every time. You know, you hanged up in the smoke overnight. And then the next day, maybe you'd boil it or you'd fry it or whatever way you want. Eat and then go out and eat some berries right around the around our camp. And after 2 days and a half, then it kind of left up a little bit. We could, I mean, sun started to come out in and out, you know, so we just early said, let's go back. So we started to go back. We was out there for 9 days and we didn't know it, you know. How long was out there? 9 days we was out there and we didn't even know the days was going by that fast, you know. So on our way back, we this bear that we, second bear we got, we put it on our pack and then start packing again. Then we got back on the hill, then we camped there again where we had our first camp. And the next day it was raining again, but we had just only about 2 miles to go down to the to our boat, you know, mostly all downhill. So we put the rest of the meat on our back, and then we went down to the boat. And it rained so damn hard, we were all wet, you know, by the time we get down. So we make put a tarp way up, and then we make fire under it. And they started to sit around there, and then we eat. Pretty soon one of those old master, he was gone. Then for a while he was gone, then he came back and he brought some tobacco, sugar, tea. You know, he came back with that. What he had left when he was going out, you know, because he knew he was gonna run out of food while we were out there. You know, so he hides some little of everything what he had. So when we come back, he said we'll have it here, you know. And that's what he did, you know. He come back and then he took out little of everything what he left in the woods, you know.
It must have been good.
Yeah. Well, the tobacco was good. You know, we were all out of tobacco. Everybody started after we eat, and they all smoke and chew, and then the rain never stopped. So we said, "One, put tarp over the boat." So we put tarp over the boat while these old guys, they were sitting around the campfire, and then we were ready to go. Got in the boat, and these three old men, they were sitting out in front. And they were so happy, they just started singing. They sing all the way up from 22 miles up there, and the inboard goes slow. Sometimes you go about 3 hours from down there, you know, 3.5 hours. Mm-hmm. All the way up they were just singing and moving around out there, you know, could see them. You know, were sitting behind the motor. The inboard, they almost sit about in the middle, you know, and they were sitting out in front. Singing all the way and dancing, moving around their body, you know, they were so happy, you know.
What kind of songs were they singing?
They were singing all the different Indian songs, you know, in memories of some songs that they know. Well, two of them was a good singer, but know a lot of songs, and made a lot of songs in memory of some beloved one that they lost, you know. We finally got up to the, they had camped down here about 4 miles. Well, he told me, you could use my boat and go up to Caltech, he said. So we kept on going, you know, and Simon brought me up here, at fish camp up here, at one mile up here. Well, what do you say when
you want to take a break?
Yeah.
Well, you had just finished talking about that time you went out bear hunting with those old men.
Mm-hmm.
And I have several questions about that. One of the things I was wondering is, all that time it was raining and you were under the tarp, you know, and waiting, did they tell stories then? Or are those the kind of times they talk about?
No, they never talk about stories during that time. But they said it happened to that lot to them a lot of times. You know, you get caught out there on the hills and rain in the rain. Well, they usually go out in the fall, I mean in August, you know, when the bears start to eat some berries. Well, like I said, you know, the only the biggest thing that you could get was bear and moose and caribou in those days. So, I really enjoy my hunting with them, though. Usually, guys, if you go out with some old guys, then they tell you some stories, you know, about especially when there's good weather and no nice breeze, when you're on top of the hill, you know, they tell you about some stories about long ago.
So those are the times you've learned from the things that they tell you. When you're right in town, are there times when you were young that you'd get together with them and they'd talk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you get together, then they talk. Well, the same way like we do, like if Plasker and Franklin or Sebastian, you know, get together and they start in. Talking about long time ago, what we heard from the older people, you know. Then Franklin is pretty good on it. He remember all of it too. You know. But me, sometimes I never even think about those things, you know, till somebody says something about it, and then it come to my mind, you know, what I heard long ago.
Well, that time you went hunting with those old men, how old were you?
I just got married that year. I was 21 then.
So did you get to go hunting with them again?
Or was it... No, they never went out hunting after that anymore. That was the last time they went out hunting. But sometimes we go out hunting in a group too for a moose hunting in the fall time. You know, and then I took my uncle with me that one time. And I think that was the last time he was out hunting and shooting at moose too. I know how he was because he was out in mostly out hunting in the country. And hunting games all the time, so he got pretty old, and then he couldn't walk he couldn't walk very far anymore, and he couldn't go trapping. So I asked him to go out hunting with me, you know, in my boat. And he was happy to go out with me, so I took him out. We stayed out for 2 days, I think, but we never caught anything. And we never seen any moose or nothing at all. So I was hunting geese and caught few geese. This was in fall time. I came back out to him. He was at the camp, you know, where we had camp. He was sitting there. And then pretty soon George Madras and Franklin came down. And then they were out hunting with us for about a day, but we didn't see anything. We didn't catch nothing. Well, I didn't want to come back. I didn't have enough gas to go out any further. So I went out to the Yukon with them, and I was in the slough. Went out to the Yukon with them, and there was a bunch of guys going down to Honeymoon, 60 miles below here. There was another hunting area for moose. And I wanted to go with them, but I didn't have enough gas and no food, you know. But we had to eat all our food. So I told Uncle, I'm going to go with those guys down there. I'm going to borrow some gas. You know, so George gave me 5 gallons of gas. Well, I was using only the three horse Mercury, you know. And then I could go long ways with the 5 gallons of gas. So I said, that's okay, I don't have no food, that's all right. I just want gas so I can run my motor. Then he said, you're going to go with me. So we just kept on going with those guys. There was Clement and Plasker and Nikolai. And some other guys, they were going down moose hunting down our Honeymoon. Well, I never know the country too well down there. And I want to find out the country, so I figure later on maybe if I don't catch nothing in this area, I could go down there and then I know where to go. And so I went down with them. We went down and then there was a lot of moose tracking in the slough, they call it Honeymoon Slough. So I told my uncle to sit up in front You know, so he sit up in front, and I was driving along the bank. There was a lot of fresh moose trap. We came to a place where there was a lot of fresh moose trap. The other guys were behind us, you know. They were quite a ways behind us. So I was driving really slow, and then pretty soon my uncle started to move around out there, you know. He seen those fresh track because I was running really close to the beach, you know. So I slowed down the kicker a little bit more. You know, just about idling. Then I seen a bull moose standing right on a bank up there. So I told my uncle, shoot at the moose, uncle, the moose up there. So he grabbed his gun, you know, and then he up and shot, and I could see where he hit. The willows fall down way up above it, you know. So I was all ready too, though, you know, with my rifle. So I seen the moose right pretty close in open spot, so I shot in there, and then I hit it, and then I wounded it. I jumped off the boat and ran up there, and he was still standing. So I shot him again. And then I hollered it to my uncle. I said, I got him, uncle. Well, he said, thank you. You know, every time you catch something, the old people are always happy. Because they know they're going to get something that they have eaten before, and they know how it tastes, and, you know, something fresh for them. Well, we started skinning it. Pretty soon the other guys came, Plasker and Clement Ismalka. They all came, and then we made camp right there. And then the next day went back again, went back further, and we caught a couple more moose, and then we came back to this place, and then we divide up the whole two moose into these two boats, and we started to come up the river the next day. Well, I don't know how long I was out at that time. And I must have been out for about a week. But like I said, if I go out hunting, then I don't want to come back. As long as the weather is so good, you know, I just want to keep on going. You know, sometimes I just do it for just to see the scenery or see animal. If I got enough meat, I wouldn't kill anything. Just go see it, that's all, you know. Even in these movies, if I see a movie about animals, I just sit there and watch it.
Well, you know that time we went hunting bear with the old men, it seems like there was a lot of weight you would have been carrying. How much were each of you carrying?
Well, what we did, you know, we take off all the bones out of it. You know, we take all the bones out of it, like the leg and the arm and some of the backbone. We cut all the meat out of it. And then that way we just got the meat. And whenever we camp, we just hang it up and smoke it. And then as long as you smoke it once, then it could stay for quite a long time, the moose meat, I mean bear meat. Because the outside of the skins kind of get dry. You know, and then it stays pretty good for quite a while. But like if you just get the meat and just throw it on the ground and just lay it on top of each other, the bottom most doesn't get no air. You know, and then it gets kind of sour like. Therefore, if I catch a moose or a bear, I never throw the meat on top of each other. I always kind of spread it out. Like if I'm out in the woods, I mean out hunting, and if I have to camp, I don't lay it in the boat, you know. Well, you don't get very much air when if you lay it in a boat. If you want to camp overnight and you have some meat, I always take it ashore and put some willows underneath. And if I got a place to hang it, I hang it to drain the blood out of it, you know.
And then like the bear skin and then all the bones you would leave behind
it. Mm-hmm, yeah. we left all the bears, we left all the skins behind and the bones, you know.
So the only bones you keep were like the ribs, that part?
Yeah. Well, the rib part is good for, that's about the only thing we left on there, you know, because there was four bears and two of them was pretty big.
We still had
quite a bit of weight.
Now, how heavy do you think your packs were?
Well, it must have been about from 150 to 200 pounds. Because me and Simon, we used to lift each other up, you know. After we get up on our leg, it was all right. But we couldn't, you know what I mean? You know, you couldn't get up with the pack. You know, or you had to hold something to lift yourself up.
Bend down and put your pack on, the other person push you up?
Mm-hmm, yeah. We help each other to pack, pull our pack up. And some of them guys, you could band around their head and tie onto some of their weight, their pack sack. Well, those pack sacks, they were no good in those days, you know. Right now, they got these pack saddles, you know, and then you can pack maybe about 300 pounds on it now, the way they fix them. Well, I know I can carry a whole hip bone on a moose, you know, that I couldn't lift up. Now on a pack, I could pack it on my back. But as long as you get on your feet once, then you're all right, you know. But you stop and rest, then somebody can help you to lift you up again.
So what were those packs like that you used to have?
It was just a harness ribbon. You know, they were only an inch and a quarter wide, and they were right against our shoulder, and then they were just a sack. It just sewed onto a sack.
A canvas sack.
Yeah.
So there's no pack board or anything.
There's no pack board. No, there was no pack board in it.
That must have been hard on your shoulders.
Yeah, and then after, well, not too long ago, I bought one of those plyboard pack board, just for that purpose. Like if I go out hunting, I always take it. You know, if I kill moose quite a ways back in the woods, and well, a moose hip bone on a moose is pretty hard to handle. You know, for one guy. And if you put it on a pack board, then you just tie it down on a pack board, and then you can pack it pretty easy. But you can, other than that, you cannot put it on your shoulder and then walk with it. In those days, we used to put a pole right through the hip bone, and then two guys would pack it. That's only the way you could handle it. Only the way you can pack it out to the boat, I mean, you know. But now with those pack boards, it's easy. You can put a whole hind quarter on there and probably some ribs on there and tie on. Then you could walk quite a ways with it before you get tired. You know.
What's the longest you've ever had to walk with a heavy load of meat?
Well, the longest we ever walked, me and Simon, with load of meat was about a mile and a half. You know, we killed a moose quite a ways back in the woods. I mean, it wasn't quite a ways back, but we wounded it, and then it walked with us about a mile and a half back in the woods. And then we had to run him down. We didn't want to kill for nothing, you know, so we had to run it down. And finally we caught it up, and then we shot it, and it was quite a ways back already at that time. So what we did, we kind of... done the same thing, just kind of take all the bones out of it, you know, and then we packed. We still made three trips with it, you know, about a mile and a half. We still make three trips. It took us about 5 or 6 hours to pack out that whole moose.
So usually you try and get it close to the boat.
I usually try to get it close to the boat as much as you can, but a long time ago, you know, like I said, there was hardly any games like that moose, you know. And wherever you see it, you got to get it. Regardless, you know, if it's long ways or not.
Do
And if you see a fresh track, and if you know the moose is around there, you could hunt maybe a couple of days. I did that once. I mean, not only me, but my brother-in-law, Clement, and my dad. 2 days was hunting around that one area. They both know that moose was around there. I was single that time. I wasn't married, but I just went with them in the fall time. In September or October, no. It was early in September. And you know that moose was around there, and they didn't want to give up. It took us 2 days, and then we just go around and around, you know, kind of a tracking it down. And finally, we got him after 2 days. And it was a small area, too. And we come out there at night to see if we could catch him out in the lake. No, we never caught it out feeding at night. You know, they usually come out at night before they bed down. They usually come out into a lake and then feed with some grass from the lake, you know. So we tried to catch it like that. We never got it. We finally got him in the woods. Well, there's some things that I learn. You know, if I know there's a moose around one area, and if I cannot get any other place, and I'd hunt around there till I get it, me too. So that's some of the experience that I have learned from my brother-in-law. And Clement was a good moose hunter. Besides, he was a good runner too.
So you didn't like to come home without.
Yeah, well, as an old saying, you know, you go out hunting for your family, and your family know that you're out, especially your wife, you know you're out. Well, they expect something out of you when you come back, something fresh for the family. And well, I always think of that. I said, I don't want to come back skunk to my family. And If I don't get anything, I'll stay out there till I get something for my family. Those things come to my mind when I go out hunting, when my kids were small.
What's the longest you ever had to stay out before you got something?
Well, this the time when I was out with my uncle, I guess was the longest I ever was out in. About a week we were out before I got something. But any other time after that, then I used to go out hunting alone sometimes. You know, just and then I enjoy it too if I go out hunting alone. But a lot of guys tell me that it's better if you go with somebody. You know, if something happened to you. For instance, you get hurt or something, you know, just somebody to survive you, maybe if you get hurt seriously, you know. But I don't know, feel like if I go hunting alone, then I feel better. And I always like to go out hunting with some older guy. And if I know what I'm doing, I know where to hunt. I never tell him. I always kind of depend on the older guy to tell me, you know, what to do or where to hunt. There's a lot of times I went out with my brother-in-law, Clement. You know, he's a good hunter, and he's the same way. I don't think he'd want to come back skunk, you know. I mean, without catching anything, he don't want to come back. I know where to go hunting, you know. Well, I know this country pretty good, and I know where to go hunting, but I wouldn't tell him. I let him lead me, what to do, or where to hunt.
Is that so? You learn from him, or just to respect him?
Just to respect him, or you know, when I was growing up, when we were kids and when we were growing up. our parents used to tell us, or some elder would tell us, don't answer back to older people that are older than you. And they know what they're talking about. Maybe they got some experience behind them that they say something to you. Don't get mad at them and answer them back. And that's why I get real mad if my kids answer me back. You know, if I scold them and they answer me back, well, I blow my top then. Because, you know, I never said that to my parents. And my old man used to kick at me every morning. He used to give me hell every morning. I never said nothing to my old man, because I always think my old man is—he know what he's talking about. It's an experience that he learned. He's explaining to me that I supposed to think of, realize what he's explaining to me. You know, I always think that way, and any elders, I always think like that about them too. You know.
Do you think young people could do that now? Say if you had like a men's club and you had the young men come, would they miss
it? If the guy is interested, some young kids interested, they would go there. And I know there's quite a few of these kids that would listen to me, you know. Maybe it's something that they heard about me before. You know, maybe parents told them something about me, like, you know. And if I started to talk with them, they sit down and listen to me. So, like the youth corps, I was working with them. And regardless how small those kids were, I used to have a meeting with them once a week and tell them what they are supposed to do and how what they are going to do in their future. They just sit down and listen to me, and I do all the talking, you know. Well, there's some things that I told them, one of these days you might use it. What I'm telling you.
What kind of things did you tell them?
Well, I used to tell them about the work, mostly. I said, if you work and have your mind on what you're doing at all time till you finish that job, I said, the least you will get hurt in the accident. There's a lot of careless things that hurt people. Carelessness is what hurt people. And as long as you're working at something that's really dangerous, and then you go think about something else, you sure will get hurt. Therefore, I'm telling you why you should have your mind on what you're doing all the time, and at what you're working at. And the most important thing is never answer back your boss. And if you answer back your boss get mad at you, and then pretty soon you don't know what you're doing. Your mind is not on what the job you're doing. You're just thinking about that boss that's telling you, you know. But that's what your boss for. He's supposed to tell you what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to answer him back. He know what he wants out of you, what you're supposed to do. That's why I'm hanging on to my job for a long time. I tell them, you know. I kind of explain it to them about myself. I said, there's times I get mad when my boss tell me what to do. Well, I never answer him back, but in my mind, I always think I cannot do two jobs at one time. You know, I finish one job, and then I go to other job. Like, for instance, this morning I was mad at my boss, you know, but I never said it to him. Well, yesterday I said to clean up this place, you know, so I did move some of this stuff out, and then I cleaned the floor and took out all the black marks, and then after that I mopped it. While I was doing that, he sent somebody over here. He said, the shop is, water is running in from outdoors, you know. Well, while I was still working, then I got a note about the same thing again. So after I got through, I went over there, and then I did it, you know. I shoveled off the snow. While I was still shoveling the snow, I was thinking, well, there's nothing hard for me. And there's nothing hard for anybody if they can do it, you know. It just takes time to do it. So I just, even though it was pretty hard shoveling, I done it, you know. I just shoveled all the snow off. And then I went back, and then I came back in here again, see if I had to do some artworks again in here, but there was no other job. And, well, some things like that I get mad about, you know. If there's one job to be done, and then somebody's on your back to do another job, and you never get through with your job yet.
Those are hard things to learn about work, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always better to, like for me, you know, I work here every day, and sometimes I don't know what to do. And, you know, it looks like I'm caught up with all my work. But I started to think back what I was thinking about last week, what I was supposed to do, you know. So I go find another job for myself and do it, you know. That's one reason why I think I can't work with anybody now. I'm so used to work alone. I cannot even work with my boys. You know, it's like if my boys don't know what to do, I go tell them what to do. But I'm not around there to keep pushing them, tell them you're supposed to do this and that, you know. Like for instance, if there's no wood in the house or wood or water, then I might go say it once. If I had to go say it the second time, I go do it myself. It's the same like that on every work for me. That's why they asked me if I want to be a foreman one time for BIA in here. But I said, no, I don't want to be a foreman. I said, if I'm a foreman, I'll do more work than the guys that are working. So I told him I'm going to help the electrician instead of being a foreman, you know. Well, there's one thing that I learned at that time too, you know, they want a foreman. But you couldn't get anybody. Well, there was a guy from Point Barrow that had that 2 years of college in school, you know. But they put him for a foreman, they put him as a foreman on the job. Not the general foreman, just a boss like to tell people what to do, you know. Well, I said, I never went to school that high, but I said, I got a lot of experience about work. But they said, how you got that job? He said, well, I had 2 years of college in school. And that's how I got to this job, he said, you know. I forgot what I asked him after that. Anyway, he said, well, maybe if I hadn't had the 2 years of college, maybe those guys wouldn't even talk to me. You know. Well, that's what I explained to the young kids too when I was working with the youth corps, you know. I said, you start on any kinds of job, first thing they'll ask you, what grade you were in school. And just see how smart you are. And what job you did the last time. And probably you said you just went through high school on any job you get on right now. Maybe they wouldn't even talk with you, I tell them, you know. Well, there's some experience that I learned, you know. Maybe they wouldn't even talk with you. Maybe they might give you something like push and broom like me. you know, or shoveling snow, I mean, shoveling some ditches out, or cut some brush. And I could do that, I said. I'd had no school, but I could do those things. You know, but you're smarter than me. Maybe you went to eighth or seventh grade already, and you have learned quite a bit of education in you. More education than me. But still at that, you asked for a job and you wouldn't even talk with you because you went only up to a ninth grade in school. You know, just go to high school, that's all. That's why I'm telling you kids how to work. And if you see it, your boss is watching you dragging to work, or your boss telling you to do this and it takes you a long time to figure out how to do it, you know, you'll never make any grade, just like in the school, I tell them, you know. And those kids, they sit down and listen to me as long as I'm talking, you know. I was really enjoying working with those kids. I mean, try to help them to think about their future.
You think you'll do that used car again, or do they have that anymore?
Yeah, they still have it. They call it the youth program now. Yeah, they're the ones that put the bleachers back there on that baseball field. They maintain that place. When I was working with them, I like to do some things like that where the kids would have some kind of an entertainment, like baseball or basketball, or, you know, just try to keep them away from some other teenagers that are not very good, that want to drink or do something else, something wrong around town, you know. And I thought it was about the best thing to them for them to do is being some kind of athlete, and then they'd be away from a lot of trouble, maybe. You know, some kids are much different. Well, as I always say, there's no two people alike in this world, you know. It's always people from different from one another. And some kids are just got more interested in breaking things. You know. And I thought it would be good for the other kids to stay away from other ones like that, you know, like playing baseball or basketball or soccer ball or some other kind of games like that.
You
know.
Do you think that would help? Do you think it made a difference for them?
It makes a difference for them, you know. Well, when I was growing up, I mean, even after I got married, if there was a baseball game, I'd drop my own work that I'm doing and around my house. I'd go to that ball game. You know, so if there's a baseball or soccer ball, you know, I'd drop my work and play with them. And I'd wish that lot of people were like that, you know. I even tried to encourage some of the guys that were as old as me to go along with me and play with them, you know.
Well, they seem to play basketball a lot. They use the gym
quite a bit. Well, I thought that was about the best thing that they ever put up here was the gym. Well, some of these kids, they were, you know, they have nothing to do, just wandering around in the evenings. And if I had a way of my own, I'd keep the kids in there in the gym, you know, just to keep them away from other people that's probably drinking, probably their family is drinking and don't know where to go, maybe go to the next house, to another, you know. Well, that's one thing I was forbidding from my kids. I try to keep some things around my house, Like, I even make some sandbox for my kids. Swings. I put up a swings. You know, just so my kids don't go uptown and run around. Well, there's not too many that are in a women's club there. They got members, like, you know, they got members too, the women's club. And I don't know why some, they doesn't invite some young generations, young kids, like the teenagers, to go to their club and teach them how to sew, teach them how to knit.
It's mostly older women?
It's mostly all older women, you know, they got their own club.
So what did they do?
Well, they, mostly they sew and just, sew some things and, well, they got their own money, you know, they could order some stuff and then they could sell some, like mukluks, knitted gloves. You could buy all those things and then sell it, and after they make them.
So who do they sell it? Where do they sell it to? Some other places?
Well, they never do that lately now, since they got, you know, they raised some money. I mean, they got so much money in their bank right now, I guess. They never done that lately. But like, if there's somebody, like somebody pass away, you know, they always get together and then donate something, like the church or something.